to Sight.
Spend the day with Sight.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Radio Sight Thursday Live.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, Sai Ram, and wishing you a very holy, happy, joyous, peaceful, love-filled, warmth-filled Deepavali from all of us here at Radio Sai. Dear listeners, this period of time during the year is one that is filled with great excitement, thrill, joy, happiness, and bubbling energy. And all this has been a feature every year, including the times when we celebrated it in Bhagwan's divine presence. Deepavali is that time of the year when a smile is writ large on every single face. And most often, like the moon reflects the light of the sun, this joy and smile writ large on everybody's face would often be the reflection of the smile and joy that would be writ large on Bhagwan's face. Yes, dear listeners, every year during Deepavali, it would be a feature where Swami would sit amidst the students and the devotees and watch a magnificent display of fireworks. And as the fireworks would light up the skies, a beautiful smile would light up Swami's face. And looking at that captivating, beautiful, sweet smile on Swami's face, all of our faces would light up. And at the end of a very unforgettable, memorable session, Bhagwan would ensure that all the students, all the children especially, the tiny tots from the primary school, would get firecrackers, the sparklers, to light up the evening, light up their hearts, and make them very, very, very happy. So, it is no coincidence that on this very special Thursday, Prem and myself, we have chosen the topic of Deepavali as our afternoon satsang. Sai Ram, Prem, welcome, and it is so joyous, and I'm so excited about what we are going to do today. That in that excitement, sorry Swami, I forgot, we offer our most humble pranams at your lotus feet, the place where we find great peace, great solace, great joy, and great comfort.
Sai Ram Arvind, and a very, very happy and holy Diwali to all our listeners. It indeed is a wonderful thing that we are having a Thursday. It's a Thursday and it's a Diwali, and we are having this opportunity to wish all our listeners on a Thursday. It's so really beautiful. It's indeed one of the most special celebrations in the Indian calendar. And for more reasons than one, the spiritual reasons and the significance is what we'll try to go in. But of course, even as a celebration, as a festival which is filled with joyous festivities, this is one thing which really stands out. And I think across the country, this is one festival which is celebrated by people of all religion too, in fact. And I think even as we were all children and we grew up, we remember celebrating it with all our friends, you know, some of them from the Christian faith, some of them from the Muslim faith. And thanks to the firecrackers, which is part of the celebration.
That would be the bonding
exactly,
factor.
Because firecrackers means children enjoy it and children have no religion. And I think the concept of religions come when you grow up. So Children
are born wise till we ruin them and make them
education.
Good adults. Yes.
Right. So that indeed makes Diwali a very, very special occasion. And, you know, the word itself rings with so much of freshness about it. Deepavali, as Swami would say, Deepavali, you know, a row of lights. And if, dear listeners, you were not born and brought up in India, and if you're wondering what it is, this festival to celebrate it in India, if you walk across the streets in any city of India, you would see that many houses will be lit up with small oil lamps. And this is supposed to be one of the darkest days of the month, but it becomes bright because of this, you know, this practice of lighting small lamps in every house, in every street.
Exactly, we will go into that deeper. Swami has indeed spoken about this, Prem, where he says what is the meaning behind the darkest day of the month becoming the brightest day of the month thanks to the lamps being lit everywhere by people of all, you know, caste, creed, race, nationalities also, without, as you said, this is a festival of unity where there's a lot of bonding, there's love and warmth. The two beautiful features of light, which is brightness and warmth, both, there is love and light during the festival. And, you know, speaking about light and flame, I'm reminded of one competition that was organized in the hostel mm-hmm. when we were studying there. A picture of Swami lighting a matchstick mm-hmm. had been put up, and Swami had a very interesting expression on his face. It was a very inviting expression. It was as if Swami is communicating something through like a dumb charade. He's mm-hmm. just not speaking, but he's trying to communicate something. And this photo was put up on the notice board, and it was said, this is, you know, this was a entry for, I mean, the boys were invited to send entries for a caption contest. And the caption, I still remember the caption that won the prize. It said, one who matches his ideals and sticks to his principles will surely be enlightened. And the match, stick and light of the enlightened were all in quotes to pun with the matchstick there. And I remember this because this is what Deepavali is about. Deepavali is about lighting and enlightenment. And that is what is symbolized by the lamp. Swami often gives this example. He says, imagine there is a dark room. The dark room might have been dark like that from years, from ages, for centuries possibly. It does not mean that just because it has been dark for centuries, it will require centuries for it to light up. Swami says, all you need to do, different occasions Swami has said different things. One occasion he has said, all you need to do is just strike a match. In an instant, the darkness is gone, replaced with light. In another discourse, Swami says, all you need to do is just press a switch. Once the light comes on, in an instant, there is light everywhere. You know, Swami uses this example to tell us that however long you may be suffering from the darkness of ignorance, however long you may be steeped in ignorance, it does not matter. Past is past, forget the past. Because all it takes for you to get enlightened is just that one moment of enlightenment, which can occur at any time, at any place. It occurred to Buddha under the Bodhi tree. It occurred to Tiruvannamalai.
Ramana Maharshi.
I forgot the name. It occurred to Ramana Maharshi as he just watched a few birds in flight. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. It occurred to Ramana Maharshi. Yes. Ramana Maharshi, when he was just thinking about what happens when he will die. When he was just pondering on that question and he was imagining himself to be a corpse, it happened. So you see, this moment of enlightenment happens in an instant, in the most unlikeliest of situations, in the most unlikeliest of places. And therefore, you know, Diwali gives us this very, very, very strong message of hope, that however good or bad you are, however hopeless situation that you are in, however is your past, however is your situation, it does not matter, because it is after all a matter of one moment, and that moment is waiting to happen anytime.
I'm talking of light. I'm reminded of another beautiful analogy which Swami gives. He would say that if you're in a room which is strewn with furniture, I mean, even the studio floor, you know, you have a table, you have two or three tables, you have a box, you have a cupboard, you have all these chairs and mics and so many other things. What if we were to move around this place if it was dark? There was no lights on, the whole place is dark. And Swami would say that at every step you would trip over something, you would bang into something, you would be obstructed by something in your way. And you have no clue where to move around. Okay? And Swami would say, but if someone were to come and just switch on the light, nothing in the room changes. Nothing in the room is rearranged. But you can move around the room without hurting yourself. Swami would say it's like that. In your life, you have no idea what step is going to lead you where. You don't know where you're going to find obstruction, where you're going to find a pitfall, where you will be, you know, taking the wrong route. But what does a guru do? A guru does not change anything in your life, but he just brings in that light into that dark room. Everything remains the same, but you know how to maneuver now in this newfound light. And you know, wonderful one, the qualities of the light, that's what make always light a very spiritual entity. You know, one of the most famous lokas in the Sanatan Dharma tradition is that of Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya. You know, the prayer itself seeks that lead us from darkness to light. And I think there is that in one of the suktams which we chant in the mandir, he says, Aditya Varnam Tamasav Parastat. When you transcend darkness, the light which you find is God.
In fact, light is considered synonymous with life. That's why, you know, Mrityorma Amritangamaya follows after Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya. It is also considered synonymous with the truth, the ultimate reality.
Right.
And therefore, it is almost as if the prayer Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya and Mrityorma Amritangamaya is like saying the same thing thrice. Because light is synonymous with life and truth. You know, when you were giving the example of the room that is strewn with so many objects, obstacles, and how a light changes everything, it does not change the room, but it changes how you are able to deal with the room. In the same way, the light of wisdom does not change the world. It's not as if wars will cease, and it's not as if death will no longer be there. It is just that the way you see the world will change, and that makes a world of difference. That's what happened to Gautam Buddha.
Exactly.
It's not as if he cured sickness. It's not as if he prevented death. But he was enlightened, and that changed his world completely. A similar modification of this example, I think I've read it in the Dharma Vahini, where, you know, Swami answers the question as to what is the use of me alone being good when there are so many bad people in the world. If I alone change and become good, will that help the world? Because everyone needs to change, then only the world will improve. There Swami says, a slight variant of the same example, he says, imagine a room which is strewn with all furniture.
Okay.
He says, your goodness is like a little lamp in your hand. A lamp or possibly a torch. So suppose you imagine you're holding a lamp, wherever you walk, you will be able to see what is the obstacle in your path, and you will be able to take steps in order to avoid clashing against that obstacle. And Swami says, your goodness, your dharma will protect you, and that is what is meant by dharmo rakshati rakshita. It is not as if the world will become a beautiful place, but your world will become a beautiful and safe place, because now you are able to see the world truly as it is because of the light of your goodness and your dharma. And therefore, irrespective of whether others are being good or others are following dharma, that is not your concern at all. The only good you can do to the world is to ensure that there is one fool less in the world, and that is yourself. I mean, that seems to be Swami's message, that the only good I can do to the world is to ensure that I become very good, I become dharmic, and I become noble. And that in itself is a great benefit to the world. I can do nothing to change the things that are apparently, in quotes, strewn in the world.
There's another similar analogy which Swami uses, but to bring in the importance of a guru and obedience to a guru. Swami says to, you know, trek a journey of 2 miles, you don't need a light which shows you, enlightens the 2 miles. You only need a lantern which can show you 2 feet forward. So Swami says, similarly, you know, the guru did not explain the whole process to you. Swami does not come and have to tell you that what is going to happen to your life every moment, and, you know, the future laid out in front of you. He will just tell you the next step, and all you need to do is just trust him and follow that step, and every step will take you closer to that goal.
Exactly. The faith in the guru is like a headlight of a car, which will show you the next stretch of the road that you have to traverse so that you can safely travel along. The rest is faith in the road, in the path that, you know, this road is going to take me to Bangalore. As you rightly said, we need not see all the way from Puttaparthi to Bangalore or from Bangalore to Prashanthinilayam. That is more symbolic. If I have to travel from Bangalore to Prashanthinilayam, I need not see the entire 150 kilometer stretch of the road. If I can see the next 100 meters, that is enough for me, because once I travel the next 100 meters, the further 100 meters will be revealed. That is what is meant by living in the moment and living in faith with the light of the master.
And the other analogy about light is, it's a parallel with education. You know, when I think there is a Subhashitani in Subhashita in Sanskrit, I don't know the exact verse, but what it says is the greatest wealth is education. And why is education a greater wealth than other material wealth and gold which you have? Is that because it never diminishes by giving. In fact, it grows. Mm. And the example which is given there is that of a lamp. A lamp can light 100 other lamps, but never will its effulgence diminish because of giving light to the other. And that is a very, very special quality of a lamp. I think the moment you talk about lamp lighting another lamp, the only thing which strikes me is that beautiful song which Swami used to sing referring to that episode in the Bhagavatam.
Exactly, you know, I am actually having a lot of memories connected with this and possibly can relate it with that memory itself. It was a Krishna Janmashtami day, the 6th of September 2004 to be precise. On that day a program had been planned to be put up in front of Swami, and due to circumstances that day it got changed into a program of 5 speeches.
Mm-hmm.
So, during one of the speeches, one of the boys, I remember, he sang this particular poetry piece. He sang this, and the poem describes a Gopika by the name Suguna.
Mm-hmm.
And the custom those days was such, this is, I'm speaking of the days of Lord Shri Krishna, in Nanda Gokula, that all the people would gather into the house of the head of the village and they would light their lamps from the flame that is burning in the home of the head of the village. And this is symbolic in many ways. It meant that let the prosperity not remain only with the one who is in power, let it spread to everyone. You know, they call it in modern day as, it's a very, 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 very imperfect translation, but it is called the trickle-down effect, where, you know, the top people are get benefited, then naturally the people in the bottom also get benefited. That's what they say. But it was not like that. This was more in the spirit of Kalasi Melisi Tirugudam, Kalasi Melisi Perugudam, where Swami says, Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu. Let us grow together, let us prosper together, because there's nothing like individual prosperity. I'm sorry for taking this little detour. I remember one of my elderly uncles, when he had come home, he said, you know, whenever I pray to God, I don't pray to God that God give me a car. I pray, God give me a car, give all my neighbors also car. He says, because you know, if I get a car alone, I will be the subject of everybody's envy. And that envy is only going to bring negativity towards me. And the car which I assumed would be a source of joy for me will become a source of sorrow for me. But instead of that, if along with me everybody else also gets a car, everybody is happy, and because of everybody being happy, that cumulative effect of happiness will come on to me and I will also be happy. And so you see, he said, praying for all others at the same time is not a selfless thing. It is a selfish thing, because if you truly want to be happy, you have to pray that everyone around you is also happy. So, you know, it was in this spirit that the lamp that would be lit at the home of Nanda, that is the foster father of Lord Shri Krishna, because he was a village headman, everybody would come and light the lamps to be taken to their home, saying that let the prosperity, let the light from here spread into our homes also. It made more sense because Lord Shri Krishna also lived at Nanda's home, and it also meant taking a part of that divinity to their own homes. I think, Prem, you should proceed ahead on how Swami would narrate this story of Suguna the Gopika.
You know, Swami would narrate this for many reasons. One was, as you said, you know, that feeling of the lamp in a house should be lit from the house where Krishna was born and brought up. You know, that feeling of devotion which remained even after Krishna moved away from Gokul Vrindavan, and you know, would never return after that. So many of these, the other point that Swami would make is Gopikas and the people who had love for Krishna were not only those women who were present in Gokul when Krishna was there.
Physically there.
He would say that even the women who would get married into families in Gokul after Krishna left, they too, you know, would be infected with this devotion because of being in the company of the other women in the village. And that was the most important lesson that Swami would drive. And Swami would tell that there was this one girl who comes into the family of one of the houses in that village, her name was Suguna.
And she has not seen physically Krishna.
She has never seen, Lord Krishna physically. So one day she is going to the house of, I think she would have been a new bride, and they would have told her to bring lamp, light the lamp from the house of Yashoda. And there she goes to light this lamp. And Swami says that she sees the form of Krishna in the lamp.
In the flame
in Yashoda's house, Mother Yashoda's house. And when she sees that, she is, thrown into ecstasy. And she forgets herself. She doesn't realize that her finger is being burnt. She's just lost in the joy of seeing Krishna's form. And that's when Mother Yashoda comes in. And she realizes that, oh God, this poor girl, her finger is getting burnt, and she's not even realizing it. So pulls her away from the flame and asks, what are you doing? What are you lost in? That is when Suguna says that, I have seen the form of your divine child in this flame. And then Swami says the news spreads. Because that so much of hunger for the darshan of Krishna there, all the ladies start telling each other, did you know that Suguna saw Krishna's form there? Did you know that Suguna had the darshan of Krishna?
Prem, now that you relive this episode, it makes us feel so much like, the present day situation. All of us are missing that beautiful form of Swami. And coincidentally, nothing is a coincidence, but it appears, Swami's form is also like that of a flame. Such a beautiful flame. And we are really missing physically that flame of our lives. And suddenly, we hear news of somebody having had an experience with Swami. It could possibly be Vibhuti appearing, or it could be a vision, it could be a dream. And the minute we get to know that, nowadays especially, it's even more prevalent, we start sharing, Swami came to this person, Swami came to such and such a person. And that such and such a person who was a nobody till then, suddenly becomes a sort of a mini celebrity, because God has touched him or God has touched her. And that is a similar kind of situation that developed in Gokul Vrindavan also, where everybody suddenly started speaking of Suguna, because Suguna had no interaction with Krishna. She had not danced the Ras Leela with Krishna. She had not received any interviews with Krishna. She had not had any Padnamskar, Darshan, Sparshan, Sambhashan, nothing. So she was a novice. She did not have 30 years of experience with Krishna. Nothing she had. And yet she saw Krishna. And the proof, the proof of she having seen Krishna was the fact that she tried to grab the flame. And she did not even realize that her hands, her fingers were burning, because so lost was she in ecstasy of Krishna. Swami would also dilate and say that this shows what happens when a person is truly consumed by God. He or she completely loses body consciousness. There's absolutely no body consciousness, and even if, literally if someone were to be burning, one does not realize that one is burning, because so great and so wonderful is the joy that the Lord is able to confer. That is why, Swami says happiness is truly union with God. And what poem Swami would sing was the poem that all the other Gopikas would sing about Suguna. The meaning goes as, all of them are singing, hear. Apparently, Suguna has been able to see Krishna, it seems. Because it is like a rumor and it's like a kind of gossip going down the grapevine, they are not speaking of it with the confidence of a news reader. They are saying it like in hushed tones, and apparently she has seen Krishna, it seems. It seems she has seen him at Nanda Gokula, Nanda's house. It seems she saw him in the flame. It seems. So it's all in the it seems that the entire poem has been composed with the word in Telugu, anta, the ta ending, which means it seems. And Swami, on that Gokulashtami day, when he heard this boy narrate this, Swami became so happy. You could see that joy on his face. It was not Deepavali, but his face was lit up. It was Krishna Janmashtami. And when Swami got up to speak, he spoke at length about the love that Suguna had, and how she totally forgot herself in her love for Krishna. And Swami dilated on many more Krishna stories, and Swami himself sang those few lines. And that was when the students noticed that Swami seems to have a special attachment to this poem and to Suguna. Isn't it so beautiful, Prem, that love is eternal? The love that Suguna embodied for her Krishna was still present because Swami embodied so much love for that Suguna. So that is such a beautiful message for all of us, that love for God is permanent. It stays beyond time, it stays beyond space, it stays beyond our birth and death. And that is why in the Krishna Janmashtami and other events following, on several occasions, the students sang this very poem in Swami's presence.
And we're going to play you that song which was sung by students. But before that, you know, the wonderful thing about this thing is, I think in that very same discourse, Swami explains that people say that Krishna never returned to Vrindavan after he left for Mathura. But the fact was, he was coming back and he was giving darshan. He was not being seen by everybody, but he was being seen by those who really wished to see. And Swami said, God is always like that. If you really wish to see, if you really pine for Him, God will come before you. I think that's a very, very clear message for
pining
all of us.
Pining is the most important. And you know, Swami Himself has said it. Swami says, if you need me, you deserve me. You know, the only qualification that Swami demands from us is that we need Him. It does not matter what our past has been. It does not matter how our present is. If at all, from the depths of our heart, we just look to Swami. I'm telling this not only from what Swami has said in His discourses, Prem. I'm telling this from personal experience. Any of those moments when you really feel that, Swami, I need you, Swami, all you need to do is, you know, just look at His picture or look at Him in your heart, or need not look at Him also. Close your eyes and just say, Swami, I need you. And the way Swami comes into your day, comes into your life, He comes in with such intensity and such magical force that you have no other choice but to accept that, you know, this is Swami. And you can realize that it is Swami because from that moment onwards, the despair that you were feeling, the frustration you felt, the irritation, the anger, all that seemed to just melt away, and they're replaced with a kind of inexplicable joy. You just feel like hopping back home or hopping anywhere else rather than just walking, because there's a spring in your step, there's a lightness in your heart, there is a smile on your face, and there's a kind of freshness in the mind. All that happens when God comes into our life, and for all that to happen, all we need to do is just pine for the Lord and need Him.
So dear listeners, with that, we're going to play you that small poem which Swami used to sing, but of course this is being sung by students. Don't go away, because on the other side of the song, we're going to talk about the real significance of Deepavali as taught to us by our dear Swami, and it is indeed very, very necessary and important to know what is the significance behind celebrating this beautiful festival of Diwali.
సుగుణకు కనిపించెనంట సుగుణకు కనిపించెనంట మన సుగుణకు కనిపించెనంట ఏ మహిదలోపము వింట కనులకు కనిపించెనంట నన్ను నింట గోపాలుడంట దీపాల కనిపించినంత ఆ దీపాల కనిపించినంత సుగుణకు కనిపించినంత మన సుగుణకు కనిపించినంత ఈ యశోద ఇంట గోపాలుడంట దీపాల కనిపించినంట ఆ దీపాల కనిపించినంట అదే వేలికి తగిలిన మంట అదే వేలికి తగిలిన మంట సుగుణకు కనిపించెనంట మన సుగుణకు కనిపించెనంట.
Welcome back, dear listeners, and we are in the middle of a satsang, we're talking about Diwali. Today is Diwali, a beautiful festival being celebrated all across this wonderful country. Like many other festivals, Arvind, we just went past a 9-day festival, the Navratri. And I don't know if the younger generation knows that Diwali also is a multi-day festival. It's not just that one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if they know, they would be bursting crackers, you know, on more days than just that one day. But it's a 5-day festival. It starts, if today is Diwali, it started 2 days ago. The real festivities start
on the 13th day of the month.
On the 13th day of the Krishna Paksha, or the, you know, the waning stage of the moon.
Mm.
And ends on Diwali, which happens to be, the main festivities, the peak of the festivities is on Diwali, which is the Amavasya, or the no moon day. So starting the first day of the celebrations starts with the day which is dedicated to the worship of Lakshmi.
I think before we go into that, Prem, we just give the outline. That is, the 5 days are, the first day is known as Dhanteras or Dhantrayodashi. The second day is known as Naraka Chaturdashi. See, the first one of Trayodashi meaning the 13th day.
13th day.
Chaturdashi meaning the 14th day. Then the next comes the Lakshmi Puja day or the Deepavali day. That is what we are in today. After that, the fourth day is Bali Padyami, or also in North India, some places it's called as Diwali Padwa. So Bali Padyami is mostly, that's the name in south of India. So that is the fourth day. And the fifth day is Bhau Bij, or a day to celebrate the bonding between a brother and a sister, and between siblings basically. So the entire Diwali is a 5-day celebration. Dhanteras, Naraka Chaturdashi, Deepavali, Bali Padyami, and Bhau Bij.
And Dhanteras, as you explained so beautifully, it is Dhan. Tera in Hindi means 13.
Hmm.
And Dhan means money.
Wealth.
Wealth. And it is also called in Sanskrit as Dhanatrayodashi. Dhana again is wealth, and Trayodashi is the 13th day. And it is believed that, you know, Goddess Lakshmi is supposed to have come out from the churning of that ocean of milk. We've spoken about it on earlier occasions, where the asuras and the gods...
I think during the Ramayana satsang we spoke about.
Right. In one of the explanations which Vishwamitra gives Rama and Lakshmana, I think it comes there, where these two groups of people churn the ocean of milk, and many things come out of that. Some are very pleasant, some are very good and useful, and of course there was the poison, halahala, which comes out of it. Eventually comes the vessel which carries the amrutam, or the ambrosia, which can confer immortality. But one of the things which comes out of it, or one of the people who come out, emerge from it, is Goddess Lakshmi, the goddess of wealth. And when she emerges, you know, the two parties which are churning the ocean, they're churning it for the amritam. So some of the things they kind of take within themselves. I think one of the things which comes is the airavat, which comes out of it. The in Lord Indra takes
it.
There's
also a horse that comes. There are so many things that appear out.
Hmm. But when Goddess Lakshmi comes, you know, they immediately realize that none of them can actually lay claim over goddess, because she's mother, and none of them. So she does a penance so that Lord Vishnu will accept her.
And Goddess Lakshmi is considered as the goddess of wealth.
Goddess of wealth. And it is believed that Dhanteras or Dhanatrayodashi is the day on which Mother Goddess Lakshmi was accepted by Lord Vishnu as his consort. So it is believed that this is the day her penance, you know, led to fruition, and she's happiest on this day. So if you were to pray to her on this day and seek for boons, it would just come to you in a shower. So that is the essence of, you know, praying to Lakshmi on this day, the Dhanatrayodashi. But it's so symbolic, isn't it?
Yes, it is very symbolic. And the symbolism is so deep in its meaning. So I would like you to expound on that, as you did yesterday during our pre-satsang. But before that, I just wanted to insert one more little snippet here.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, apart from the birth of Lakshmi, which happened at the end of the churning of the ocean,
mm-hmm.
even Lord Dhanvantari, the Lord of medicine, is the god of medicine, is supposed to have appeared from that churning of the ocean on this very same day. And so Some people celebrate this as Dhanvantari Jayanti, that is the day of birth of God Dhanvantari, the God of medicine. And Dhanteras, therefore, again, you know, Dhanvantari and Dhanter both begin the same way. So Dhanteras is also supposed to be for the worship of Lord Dhanvantari. Now back to the inner symbolism.
Yes, before that, I think given the current scenario in the world, it doesn't make a difference whether you're praying to Dhanvantari or Dhanalakshmi.
The cost of medical care is so high.
And there is so much of correlation. If you're a doctor, you really make a lot of money, I think.
Exactly.
But going back to this, you know, there is this, this is a pattern in Indian mythology, in scriptures. There is always an inner significance to whatever is said.
You know, everything is metaphorical.
Right. All of us need money and comforts in life. We all need some kind of, you know, Swami says that it, one of the purusharthas is desires, and artha is nothing, there's nothing wrong in it as long as you achieve your wealth in the dharmic way. So it is not wrong to go after money. So all of us need money. So it is said.
I would like to interrupt you here just to say, you know, when Swami says the four goals of human life are dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma is righteousness, artha is wealth, kama is desire, moksha is ultimate liberation. Swami says people often think that artha and kama are like worldly things, while dharma and moksha are the spiritual things. Swami says it actually comes as a package, not individually. Swami says whatever artha you get, you have to get it via dharma. So earn artha, earn wealth via dharma, and have kama or desire towards moksha. So this is how Swami blends what we call as worldly life and spiritual life together as one life. You cannot separate worldly and spiritual. Have artha, which is earned dharmically, and have kama, desire for moksha.
Right. And in fact, in other places Swami says your desire should lead you to moksha. You know,
have such desires.
Right. That's why he says the best desire to have is the desire to be close to God. And that is something which will lead you to moksha. So Swami says that it's not wrong to, you know, want to lead a comfortable life, to have wealth. So all of us have this, you know, innate necessity to please Mother Goddess Lakshmi. So what does the scripture say? The best time to please Lakshmi is on the day she got accepted by the Lord. So saying that the best way to invite Lakshmi to your house or to have her shower her grace on your house is when you use the money which is there with you for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. You know, when you use it in the service of the Lord.
Beautiful. In fact, speaking of serving the Lord, Swami would often say in his discourses, you know, Swami says that people nowadays are so interested in pleasing Lakshmi, they forget that Lakshmi is always forever at the feet of Lord Narayana.
Right.
And what do they do for the Narayana? You know, Swami puns on this because the poor people who don't have food to eat, and to whom, you know, Swami would himself serve the food, were called as Narayanas. Swami says the Narayana is neglected and people go behind Lakshmi. They do not realize that Lakshmi is such a pativrata, that is, she is so steadfast in her service of Narayana that she will never let go of Narayana's feet. Instead, Swami says, if you please Narayana, and if Narayana resides in your heart and your home, Lakshmi automatically follows because she has to be at the feet of Narayana. It's almost like, you know, buy one, get the other free offer. Get Narayana, Lakshmi comes automatically. Get the Lord, then the wealth automatically comes. Serve the Lord, automatically wealth comes. But Swami says, so narrow-minded man has become that he's focusing on obtaining and coveting wealth and wealth alone. And that is why he doesn't seem to be achieving the goal that he wishes to achieve by seeking wealth, which is happiness and peace of mind.
Exactly. And the problem is, of course, if you give this equation to all of us, you know, what we would say is, let us please the Lord to welcome Lakshmi. But what Swami says is just focus only on the Lord. Lakshmi will automatically come to you. You don't have
exactly
to worry.
Correct.
I mean, I think that's again, you know, if you're told to be selfless, to be more successful in life, we will see the success in life, then the selfishness automatically creeps in.
It's not as if that we, you know, see, ultimately the true motive counts.
Exactly.
I cannot disguise my motive for seeking wealth by saying, I am praying to Narayana. You know why? Because I know that by pleasing Narayana, I'll get Lakshmi. And therefore, you know, indirectly, it doesn't work because, let's be frank, whom are we fooling? we are only fooling ourselves, because whatever we know as the truth in the innermost recesses of our heart, the Lord too knows, because that is where He resides. So, as you rightly put it, it's not about camouflaging a desire as another noble desire, but it's about truly seeking and longing for the Lord, because the other things will automatically come anyway.
Exactly. And the, you know, Lakshmi in many other places, Swami says, it's not just wealth. It is anything. She even represents desires. She even represents, you know, your ambitions, your desire to achieve anything. So it really means if you're ready to give up something for the Lord, if you're able to, in trust, give something to the Lord which is dear to you, you will be showered with bounty. And I'm reminded of a wonderful story, you know. I don't know if you've read the book by Swami Rama,
in Living with the Himalayan Masters. I've read parts of it.
Right. In that he narrates a story, I think it is his own, I'm not too sure of that, where he's a young boy in the Himalayas living with his master. And they're following very strict disciplines. You know, they do a lot of ritual worship and a lot of meditation throughout the day. And only once a day in the evening, they would sit down and have a meal. A very humble and very simple meal. I think it had two rotis and a little bit of sabji.
Some bread and some vegetables.
Right. And they would have it only once a day. Okay. And one day, the guru comes up to this boy and he tells him that today, a very great Mahatma is coming to visit us. So we need to host him. He's going to be our guest. So I want you to give away your meal of the day to him. So now this boy, he's a young boy, he's a teenager, he starts protesting. He says, first of all, I eat only one meal a day and you want me to give it away. And you know, he says, why don't you give it away? You're after all a vairagi. You know, you claim to be a renunciant. Why don't you give your meal away? Why do you want me to give? He says, nothing doing. You're the younger one. So you have to give your meal. And we have to serve the guest. Because Swami says, you know, it is said that Atithi Devo Bhava, treat your guest as God. So you have to give your share of a meal to this man. So by the time this altercation is going on, this guest already appears in the ashram. So this boy has no other choice but, you know, he grumblingly he goes, takes his plate of the meal of the day and gives it to this guest who has come. And this guest also doesn't refuse. He doesn't ask that, do you have to eat and all that, and he just eats. So all this while this boy is grumbling, you know, first of all, this master is so cruel and this guest is equally bad, whatever, all these things are troubling him. So this Mahatma who comes, you know, he eats his meal, he gets up and then he calls this little boy and he says, today you've given me your meal, so I want to give you a blessing. And you know what a beautiful blessing he gives. He places his hand on this little boy's head and he says, unless and until food and water is brought in front of you, you will not be troubled by hunger and thirst.
Wow. Wow.
And imagine, the master all the while knew that this was going to come if this little bit of sacrifice was done by this boy. But you know, at a certain point he even had to force that sacrifice on the boy. But you know, it's a wonderful lesson that if you are ready to give up something which is so dear to you, it's one meal a day, it's everything, it's something which you're hanging on to for sustenance. If you're ready to trust your master, if you're ready to trust God, if you're ready to trust Swami and give that away, what you get in return is going to be unimaginable.
This is something very, very unique to spiritual masters, you know, Prem. I have seen, I'm sure you have also seen, that Swami would actually, this is not only Swami in the Sri Satya Sai Baba frame, even a Shirdi Baba, he would ask people, what have you got for me? What have you got for me? And, you know, I used to at times find this as a kind of a discrepancy. Because, you know, we know instances where Shirdi Baba has asked and Swami has asked. But in a discourse, Swami says, I never ask, I always give. You know, it seemed like a mismatch. I'm saying it seemed because it is not true. You know, just as in this case, it looked, in the beginning, it appeared as if Swami Rama was being asked something. Who is the ultimate beneficiary? It's actually Swami Rama. And in the sense, if Swami Rama knew what is coming, he would have never felt that one leaf of food that he is giving up is actually a sacrifice. He would have looked at it as a very, 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 very meager and tiny investment that he is making for such a grand blessing. I'm reminded of a beautiful poem from the Gitanjali. You know, I also remember it's all, in fact, it is the 50th stanza, I think, in the Gitanjali by the Indian Nobel laureate Gurudev Rabindranath Tagore. He writes, you know, and it is so metaphorical, so beautiful. He writes of a beggar who has set out to get his daily share of food.
Yes.
You know, he goes begging and suddenly in the distance, in the horizon, he sees that along with the golden rising sun is also a chariot of gold, and the chariot is being pulled by four horses and it's headed towards him. He realizes that the emperor of the land is here. The emperor of the land who owns everything that he can see. And therefore he feels, you know, my day and my life is made. Because I can ask from the emperor anything that I desire and he will give it to me, and that's it. This life of begging is over forever.
He says, no, even as the king passes, I'm going to be, there's going to be wealth all around me lying in the dust.
Just like there is dust all around here now, there will be gold. That is what his imagination is. And that is not a wrong imagination, because that is the capability of the emperor. But as the emperor comes close, the emperor comes and stretches out his hand and asks the beggar, what is it that you can give me? What can you offer to me? And the beggar thinks, what mockery is this? What kingly jest is this? What is this? I expected you to come and make my life complete and fulfill every of my desire. Instead, you are coming out and stretching your hand and asking me to give something. I have very little. What can I give you? But the king, the emperor does not leave. He persists. He says, please. He just says, give me, what is it that you can offer to me? Give me something. The beggar now looks into his bag and he sees he has got a little food and little collection that he feels he much, very much needs for his life. For his day-to-day living he needs. So from the bag, Rabindranath Tagore writes that, I took out the smallest grain of corn. You know, the beggar feels that this corn, this much I can give up.
The least corn, the smallest corn,
because the other corn I need to assuage my hunger. So this is possibly what I can give. And he gives one grain of corn to the emperor. The emperor receives it without a thank you, just rides away without giving anything in return also. And the beggar is really taken aback and he's stunned at this experience. And he says he returns home during dusk. And he empties his bag to look at his day's collections. Amongst all the other little tinsel and trash that are there, he says, he finds one golden grain of corn. And that is when the connection strikes. As to, you know, he had given just one grain of corn to the emperor, and in return now he has got a golden grain of corn. The poem ends with him rueing and thinking, oh, how I wish I had the wisdom to give the emperor my all. That is what happens to each one of us in our life, Prem. You know, we seek material benefit and money and, you know, a position and relationships from God. We keep asking. We keep asking because we feel we need so much for our lives. And we feel that we don't have our time to give. You know, I was just listening to the interview by Brother Raghu, the previous interview, where the vice president from the state of Bihar and Jharkhand, he was saying how some people say that, you know, Swami has told us to do our duty, it takes us time to do duty, we don't have time for seva, we don't have time to, you know, give for other activities because I have to do my office duty and such things. I feel all of us, when we do that, we are as foolish as this beggar, thinking that I need this, I need to fend for myself, I need to do this for myself, so I can't offer anything to the Lord. Not only when we get an idea of what the Lord's grace is, we will also repent, thinking that, oh, how we wish we had given our everything up for the Lord. Why am I thinking about a little time, a little relationship and a little money for the Lord? How I wish I can give up everything. Because, believe it or not, Prem, we may decide that we want to give up everything to the Lord. But it's not easy, because the Lord will not accept until and unless it is given with the greatest selflessness and the greatest kind of, you know, with that bubbling enthusiasm and spirit. How many people have we heard saying it is so difficult to make Swami accept anything? So, the story does not end with deciding to give everything to the Lord. It is a great privilege and honor if the Lord decides to accept anything from us. And I feel that is what is a powerful message from Dhanteras. You know, that Lakshmi is happiest at the feet of Lord Narayana, and that is where all our wealth, be it in terms of our leadership qualities, be it in terms of our money, in our terms of our relationship, whatever resources we have, they find fulfillment only at the feet of the Lord.
And the other idea is, like, of course, one thing is Goddess Lakshmi is at his feet. You know, you pray to him and you please him and all your needs are taken care of. But the other thing is, he's completely fulfilled. You know, what is something which you really desire and which is striking you with awe, the wealth and the prosperity, that is equal to what sits at his feet. And you know how much more, he doesn't have anything that you can give and anything that he needs. Because that is what is that, you know, whenever you talk of Diwali, whenever we had Diwali celebrations in front of Swami, the day would not go without this one song from the movie Shirdi Ke Sai Baba being sung. It's about Diwali. But what leads to that song in the movie, and of course that's a documented event which happened in the life of Shirdi Baba, that also is about this very thing where, you know, the Sashyatra has that.
Yes, Shirdi Baba, you know, for Deepavali, he would go to different grocers and traders in the village of Shirdi and ask for oil, because he, you know, Shirdi Baba would celebrate the festivals celebrated by both Hindus and Muslims. So though he was like a fakir and dressed as a Muslim, he would celebrate Deepavali and he goes to different traders and asks for oil to light the lamps. Once everybody refuses him, so the way it has been picturized in the movie is slightly different, but in the movie they show it as Shirdi Baba telling one of the little girls that, you know, get some oil for the lamps, let's celebrate Diwali here. She comes back crying and she says, Baba, all of them say that the oil has got over. It is not true. All of them have stocks of oil, but they don't want to give it away free to some whom they consider as a fakir and a beggar. So they don't want to give it to him. Because they don't want to give it to him, you know, she's in tears and one of her teardrops falls into a bowl of water that is placed in Dwarka Mai, in that masjid. And Shirdi Baba says that, you know, this teardrop of pining is enough. We don't need oil because we have got a lot of oil. And Baba picks up that water and pours it into lamps and lights. And he lights lamps with water. Because the oil that Swami speaks, later on, you know, Swami also says that the lamp, the light that the lamp gives is the light of illumination, which is Atma Jyoti. And in order to light it, you need detachment. Detachment. That is something that the traders and shopkeepers apparently lacked. They were so attached to their oil over God. Swami says, the vessel, that mud pot is detachment. It should be empty. And in that you have to fill the oil of bhakti or love for God. That is what that little girl in that movie had, you know, when she sheds a teardrop that Shirdi Baba won't be able to light lamp, that is love for God, love for Baba. So the oil is love or bhakti. Bhakti is love for God. And in that you need the wick, Swami says, the wick of focus or concentration. Finally, the spark of knowledge. And then when all these four come together, you have the Atma Jyoti, which will dispel all the darkness. And that is the inner significance of Deepavali.
So dear listeners, we'll just take a short break now. We'll play for you that song sung by Swami's students on this wonderful occasion of Deepavali, and we'll continue our discussion on the other side of the song.
दीपावली मनाए सुहानी मेरे बाबा के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी दीपावली मनाए सुहानी मेरे साईं के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली श्रद्धा का दीपक भक्ति की ज्योति श्रद्धा का दीपक भक्ति की ज्योति सत्य प्रेम की जलती निशानी सत्य प्रेम की जलती निशानी दीपावली मनाई सुहानी दीपावली मनाई सुहानी मेरे साईं के हाथों में जादू का पानी दीपावली की अमृत वाणी, मेरे साईं की अमृत वाणी। मैं तो भैर साईं दीवानी, मैं तो भैर साईं दीवानी। ओ द्वारिका मैया ये भेद पुरानी, द्वारिका मैया ये भेद पुरानी। दीपावली मनाए सुहानी, दीपावली मनाए सुहानी, मेरे बाबा के हाथों में जादू का पानी। दीपावली मनाए सुहानी, मेरे साई के हाथों में जादू का पानी। दीपावली दीपावली दीपावली।
Dear listeners, we are in the middle of a wonderful satsang where we are ourselves discovering the inner significance of Diwali, this festival, because in a sense we should be grateful to you, because though we have been celebrating this festival for so many years, I think many of these wonderful intricacies and nuances about this festival, we ourselves are learning today, because we wanted to present this satsang to you, and we are grateful to you for that. We spoke about the Dhanteras or Dhanatrayodashi, the first day of the festival. The second one is also a very significant festival. In fact, some people say that this is as significant as the day of Diwali itself. It is called Naraka Chaturdashi, or the day which is dedicated to Naraka, who was actually a Narakasura. Okay, it says Naraka Chaturdashi, so this is definitely the annihilation or the killing of an asura by name Narakasura. And the story of Narakasura is also a very significant one. We'll come to the significance later, but we'll tell you the story now. This asura, Narakasura, is supposed to be born to Varaha Avatar and Bhudevi, or Goddess Lakshmi, in the form of Mother Earth. And it's interesting, you know, somebody who is born to an avatar, somebody who is born to divine parents, becomes an asura. And that itself is a very revealing story which Swami has told in many discourses.
Swami says that, you know, though Narakasura was born to Bhudevi, after Varaha Avatar, that is Lord Vishnu, rescued Bhudevi from Hiranyaksha.
Right, he comes in the form of a boar.
Yes, but Swami says, though Narakasura was born to such divine parents, because of his association with Banasura. Now, Banasura story is entirely different one, you know. In fact, Banasura had the protection of Lord Shiva, and to annihilate Banasura, Lord Krishna had to battle Lord Shiva. It is considered as one of the most epochal battles, where Lord Shiva battles Lord Vishnu. It's an amazing story in itself, we'll not go into that. But because of the influence of Banasura, because of the company of Banasura, Narakasura becomes a demon. And you know, the Bhagavatam gives this story as an example to show that in spite of having a glorious and noble parentage, your company, your sangha, the company that you keep is so important, because if you don't have a satsang actually means good company. And Swami in fact takes it one level higher, and he says sat means your inner being, your true being, that is atma. And satsang is to be in communion with one's own higher self, that is to be one with the atma. But if we are not able to reach that level of satsang, at least we can have a satsang like this, where we keep good company, company of good people, company of good thoughts, company of good words, and company of good ideas. So because of bad company, Narakasura becomes the demon, and this is often highlighted as how important it is that we keep good company in spite of a noble birth. And so therefore Narakasura becomes a tyrant, a demon who conquers the earth and the heavens, and he is a menace. Everybody is tortured by him. So much so that his own mother, Bhudevi, Mother Earth, feels that he is a burden on her.
And the funny part is, you know, when he is born as a child to Bhudevi, she takes a boon from her husband, who is Lord Vishnu, that he should have a long life and he should be able to rule over, you know, the earthly realm. So that boon is granted. But he realizes that, you know, he needs to protect himself from foes who would come forward.
That is Narakasura.
So he does penance to, I think, Lord Brahma, and he obtains a boon. he says that nobody should be able to kill me. So Brahma explains to him that you're born in earth and you have to die. You know, there's no way you can be immortal in this physical form. So then Narakasura asks for a different boon. He says, nobody other than my mother should be able to kill me. Because he knows that his mother is so attached to him and she has a lot of love for him. And no mother would come forward to kill her own son. So she says, he asks that other than my mother, nobody should be able to kill me. So that boon is granted. And then he goes about, you know, troubling all the people. He imprisons all the suras or the gods under the leadership of Lord Indra. And that is when all the other, you know, sages and rishis, they go and pray to Lord Vishnu. They say, you will have to come and do something. So then Lord Vishnu says that there's nobody who can kill him. There's only his mother who has the ability to kill him. So that is when, you know, he says that, but I will make sure that his life comes to an end when I come as Lord Krishna.
Hmm.
So the story goes that Lord Krishna is married to his second consort, Satyabhama. Satyabhama is supposed to be a reincarnation of Bhumata, or the mother of Narakasura. And the story goes that Mother Aditi, who is supposed to be the mother of all the gods, she comes and cries to Satyabhama, saying that this Narakasura, he is troubling all my sons.
And he has captured
16,000 maidens in all his conquests in, you know, across the world. And hearing this, Satyabhama is very, very upset. She says that somebody needs to do something. You know, he cannot go around harming so many women. So that's when she goes and tells Krishna that you have to do something. So Krishna says, all right, we'll go and, you know, engage him in a battle and let's kill him. So surprisingly, Krishna doesn't go alone. He takes Satyabhama. And Satyabhama, who is so, you know, invigorated.
Because she's one who has to kill
him. Right. She doesn't know that. You know, she's so upset with the news that she hears about Narakasura. She thinks that she's going to go with Krishna and ensure that he's killed. You know. So, Lord Krishna takes Satyabhama along with her and they travel in the Garuda, the Vahan or the vehicle of Lord Vishnu.
Eagle. It's an eagle. Hmm.
And they go to Narakasura, who lives in this city called Prag Jyotishpura.
Hmm.
No, that's his capital city, which is supposed to be fortified beyond description.
They say there are five separate forts of protection.
Five forts. Usually you have a fort which is, you know, there is a moat, there is a fort, and then you have the...
But here they say he has a fort of fire, a fort of water, a fort of air, and a fort of hills, and a fort of water. So all these are there that separate his Prag Jyotishpura from the external enemies.
And in that particular fort of water is this five-headed asura by name Mura. Murasura is his name. And in fact, in this battle, Lord Krishna kills Mura, and that is why he gets the appellation or the name Murari.
Ari meaning enemy. The enemy of Mura is Murari. So next time when we sing Krishna Murari Bhavabhaya Hari, let us realize that the word Murari has such a long story behind it.
Right. And it also, I think it is all can be also split as Murahari, the one who killed Mura.
So that is Murahara. Hara is one who destroys.
Right.
Murari. Ari means enemy.
Correct. But even when you say Bhavahari, Bhavahara, it comes from that same this one. In fact, a small mistake which we generally do is, you know, Lord Shiva is actually called Purahari.
Tripurahari, huh?
Right, because he is killed he destroys the three cities.
Tripura, huh?
Right. But sometimes we sing Murahara in Shiva bhajans. Actually, it is Purahara. Here it is Murahara for Lord Vishnu. So that is the story. Then he goes and, you know, he attacks Narakasura. But during that battle, Narakasura fires an arrow against Lord Krishna, which Lord Krishna pretends that it has hit him and he falls in a faint. And that is when Satyabhama, who, you know, she gets so wild with it, she takes up arms and starts fighting with Narakasura, and who is, you know, in the ignorance of not knowing who Narakasura really is, she starts fighting with him and she kills Narakasura in that battle. And that is when Narakasura realizes that whom he was fighting with was his mother, who alone could kill him in, you know, in whatever battle.
That is a very, very interesting story. But, you know, as we have discussed often, the Sanatana Dharma presents stories which can be told to all ages and all levels of people. Now, this is interesting for a child, but for those who wish to go a little deeper, so beautifully Swami explains the inner significance of this story, and I'm sure we can actually have 2-3 satsangs entirely on just the inner significance of this story. But I think we'll proceed right now with that discourse clip which Swami delivered on the Deepavali day in 1988, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
The exact date is
9th November 1988.
9th November 1988. The significance of this entire story.
ఈ నరకాసురుడు అనేటువంటి రాక్షసుడు, దిస్ నరకాసుర ది డెమన్, ఈ పాలన చేయుచున్నటువంటి గ్రామమే ప్రాక్ జ్యోతిషాపురము అని పేరు.
దట్ పర్టికులర్ సిటీ విచ్ వాజ్ రూల్డ్ బై నరకాసుర ఈస్ ప్రాక్ జ్యోతిషాపురం.
ఇక్కడ నాలుగు పదములు ఉన్నది, ప్రాక్ జ్యోతి షాపురం. ఈ నాలుగు పదములకు సరైనటువంటి అర్థాన్ని మనం గుర్తించినప్పుడు ఈ నరకాసుని యొక్క సంహారము, ఈ యొక్క ప్రాగ్ జ్యోతిషాపురము మానవుని యొక్క హృదయమని చక్కగా స్పష్టం గావించుతున్నది.
వెన్ వీ అండర్స్టాండ్ ది మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దీస్ ఫోర్ వర్డ్స్ ప్రాగ్ జ్యోతి షా అండ్ పురం.
ప్రాగ్ అనగా పూర్వము, అనగా ముందు అని అర్థం.
ప్రాగ్ రెఫర్స్ టు అర్లియర్.
జ్యోతి అనగా దీపము.
జ్యోతి రెఫర్స్ టు లైట్ ఫ్లేమ్.
షా అనగా మరచటము.
షా రెఫర్స్ టు ఫర్గెటింగ్.
పురం అనగా దేహము.
పురము రెఫర్స్ టు ద ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
పూర్వపు జ్యోతి అయినటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మజ్యోతి, పరంజ్యోతి, సచ్చిదానంద జ్యోతిని మరచడం చేతనే మానవుడు ప్రాగ్జ్యోతిషాపురం అనేటువంటి యొక్క దీని లోపల జీవిస్తూ ఉన్నాడు.
వెన్ మ్యాన్ ఫర్గెట్స్ ది ఆత్మజ్యోతి హూ హీ రియలీ ఈజ్, దెన్ హీ ఎంటర్స్ ఇన్ టు ఎ సిటీ కాల్ ప్రాగ్జ్యోతిషపురం విచ్ ఈస్ దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ.
ఇక్కడ ఈ యొక్క హృదయం నందు, ఈ ప్రాగ్జ్యోతో జ్యోతిషాపురం నందు ఈ యొక్క రాక్షస అనేటువంటి యొక్క నరత్వము కేవలము మానవత్వాన్ని విస్మరించినది.
దిస్ డెమన్ నేచర్ విచ్ ఈస్ డ్వెలింగ్ ఇన్ మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్ ఫర్గాటన్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్స్ అండ్ దేర్ ఫోర్ దట్ పర్టికులర్ నేమ్ ప్రాగ్ జ్యోతిషపురం ఈస్ గివన్ టు దిస్ ఫిజికల్.
నరుడు అనగా ఆత్మ అనే అర్థం.
నరుడు యాక్చువల్లీ మీన్స్ ఆత్మ.
ఆకాశాది భూతములు ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటి ప్రదేశమే నరత్వము.
ఆల్ దీస్ ఫైవ్ ఎలిమెంట్స్ ఆర్ ఫౌండ్ ఇన్ దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్.
ఈ నరత్వమునందు ఆకాశాది భూతములనే జలమయంగా భావించి నారములు అని కూడా పిలుస్తూ వచ్చారు.
కన్సిడరింగ్ దిస్ వాటర్ యాజ్ వెరీ ఇంపార్టెంట్ ఎలిమెంట్ అమంగ్ ఆల్ ద ఫైవ్, ఇట్ హాస్ బీన్ కాల్డ్ నారం.
నారములు అనగా జీవులని కూడా మరొక అర్థము.
అనదర్ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ నారం ఈస్
నారములకు నిలయమైనటువంటి కనుకనే నారాయణము అని కూడా పేరు వచ్చింది.
నారాయణం నేమ్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ ఒరిజినేటెడ్ బికాస్ దిస్ ఫర్ నర ఇట్ ఈస్ ద వెరీ బర్త్ ప్లేస్.
అనగా రహ అనగా లేదు,
రహ రాదు. రహ మీన్స్ నాట్,
నా అనగా లేదు,
నా మీన్స్ నో,
రహ అనగా శాశ్వతమని కూడా అర్థం వస్తుంది.
నహ ఆల్సో మీన్స్ పర్మనెంట్.
నరహ అనగా శాశ్వతము కాదు అనేటువంటి అర్థము.
నరహ దేర్ ఫోర్ మీన్స్ దట్ విచ్ ఇస్ నాట్ పర్మనెంట్.
ఇది నిత్యము సత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వం కాదు మానవత్వము.
దిస్ హ్యూమన్ నేచర్ ఆఫ్ మానవత్వ ఈజ్ నాట్ ఎటర్నలీ పర్మనెంట్ వన్.
ఇట్టి నర అనేటువంటి యొక్క పురమునందు అసురత్వం అనేటువంటి దుర్గుణములు ప్రవేశించడం చేత అతనే నరకాసురుడవుతాడు.
వెన్ ది వికెడ్ క్వాలిటీస్ ఎంటర్ ఇన్ టు దిస్ ఫిజికల్ బాడీ హీ విల్ బి జస్టిఫైడ్ బై వెన్ హీస్ కాల్డ్ నరకాసుర.
దుర్గుణములే అసురత్వములకు చిహ్నములు.
దిస్ వికెడ్ క్వాలిటీస్ ఆర్ సింబాలిక్ ఆఫ్ డెమానిక్ నేచర్.
So that is Swami explaining the real meaning of that Prag Jyotishpura and Naraka. What's the meaning of Naraka?
You know, Prem, in some a few other discourses, there are also, Swami has dilated further also, you know. One, it is so symbolic that Prag Jyotishpuram, which Swami says is one that exists before light. Prag is before, Jyotish means light. Puram is body or city. A city that exists steeped in ignorance, and you know, protecting this are the five elements. That is how it is said, you know, the five forts are supposed to be water, air, fire. So the human body is also constituted by the five elements, but one should realize that there is something much deeper than the ignorance that lasts inside, and the ignorance comes because of association with evil qualities, as Swami said, and Narakasura epitomizes all those evil qualities. I remember a talk that was delivered by Professor Anil Kumar, and in that, you know, he says that Narakasura had defeated Indra. Indra is supposed to be the lord of the Indriyas or the senses, which is nothing but the mind.
Mind.
So, Swami, you know, he was saying that Swami told in a discourse, when the negative tendencies overpower the mind, that is when destruction happens. You know, that is why Swami says, turn the mind to the left and you are locked in bondage forever. Turn it right towards liberation and freedom. At that time, what happens? Indra runs and surrenders at the feet of Vishnu or Krishna. So, when your mind is tormented by the evil vices, the vice-like grip of kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsaryam, that time the mind has to take refuge at the feet of the Lord. Manasa bhajare guru charanam dustara bhava sagara taranam. Because that alone will lead to the Lord coming to your aid, dispelling the darkness that exists in Pragjyotishpura and lighting the Atma Jyoti. Dispelling the darkness and lighting the lamp of illumination, wisdom.
The other parallel which I, which strikes me, which is so beautiful in this is, you know, Swami says that, you know, Narakasura has come from Bhudevi. You know, it is in a sense a problem which has risen from the earthly plane. Narakasura, if you say, is, you know, an epitomization of the problems which are caused in the human plane.
Exactly.
And, you know, and there are the righteous who are so disturbed by what is happening. And that is being represented here by
Satyabhama.
You know, Mother Satyabhama. And she goes to the Lord and says that, you know, there is so much of Adharma here, you'll have to do something. So the Lord comes and says, okay, we'll do something about it. And he engages
we will do something.
Right, he says, we will do something. And Satyabhama does not even think that she's going to be able to put an end to it. She says that if only the Lord is going to do, that's why she's seeking the help of the Lord. But the Lord, what does he do? He comes, he engages in the battle, but he does not put an end to the problems which are caused by all these unrest. He eventually pretends as though he himself has been inflicted by the Adharma. He himself has been hurt by what is being done, you know, unrighteously. That's when Krishna pretends to be, have fallen unconscious. But Satyabhama, who is, you know, the only weapon she is armed with, is her love and attachment to the Lord. The moment she says that what, you know, the nonsense and the bad things which are happening has hurt the Lord, that's when she finds a newborn power. I think that's a quality which is seen in all mothers. When something which is close to their heart is hurt, they seem to have hit a
reservoir
of energy and power from inside, and that's what happens here with Mother Satyabhama. She says that you dare touch my Lord, and that's when she takes the weapon and she herself kills that problem to kill what she turned to the Lord. And this is essentially what Swami does. You know, we all are turning to Swami and say, Swami, there's so much of Adharma here, there's so much of confusion here, there's so much of unrighteousness here. Swami says, yes, yes, I will do something about it. But, you know, when Swami, many times in Swami's discourses we've seen where Swami himself talks helplessly.
He says, I
am so hurt. I feel so hurt when people do like this.
I was saying, after, you know, the day when Swami decided to leave the physical, I heard so many people talking around that, you know, Swami got so frustrated, Swami got so dejected with no progress happening, none of us are changing, none of us are being good, that he ultimately decided to leave. You know, today when you say this, example of how the Lord achieves his task through the people from the same plane, it really strikes as such a perfect analogy, no, perfect matching it is. Because it appeared as if like that, all of us were even foolish to think that, oh, you know what, even Swami has decided to leave because things are beyond him. So therefore we have to do something. Possibly that is the objective. That is the objective, just like Krishna appeared to get hurt and acted as if he was helpless, not able to withstand the attack by Narakasura. That ignited the righteous ire of the mother who vanquished Narakasura. That is possibly, you know, she represents Prakriti or nature. And that is what we are all part of. We are all Prakriti, he is a Paramatma. So the Paramatma achieves solving the problem of the earthly sphere via a thing from the earthly sphere itself. So prakriti, the Lord uses prakriti to overpower the negative, that is Narkasura. And it is really a very, very apt and deep thought that we need to ponder upon even beyond this satsang.
And I think in many times, even during the war in Mahabharata, many times Krishna uses this very ploy. You know, when Bhishma is on a rampage, nobody is able to stop him. He knows Arjuna alone can stop him, but Arjuna is not ready to fight with his full capacity when he's fighting against his granduncle. That's when Krishna says that, okay, if you cannot do it, I will do it. He says, even if it means breaking the vow I took before the war. And that's when Arjuna says, no, Lord, it'll bring, you know, infamy to you. Disrepute to you. And he says, okay, I will do it. And I think this is a way the Lord works, because what has to be achieved through us, not because he cannot do it himself, but our redemption lies in we taking on adharma on our own and fighting it.
Exactly. It's backed by the Lord, supported by the Lord.
Inspired by the Lord.
Swami narrates how Krishna repeatedly attacks Narkasura.
Right.
And before Narkasura can launch his attack, Krishna escapes because he is on the Garuda. And this actually angers Narkasura. Through this, Swami delivers another message also. He says, Narkasura is thus terribly weakened before the mother delivers her fatal blow. And he is weakened not by the weapons of Lord Krishna, but by his own anger. And Swami says, that is the debilitating effect of anger. It harms the person who contains anger more than the person on whom it is delivered.
Right.
Therefore, Krishna doesn't lose his strength, but Narkasura becomes weaker and weaker. And that, dear listeners, is what Prem and I have tried to hurriedly summarize the second day of Deepavali, which is Narka Chaturdashi. The third day of Deepavali is the Lakshmi Puja day, or the Deepavali proper. It is believed that this is the day that Lord Sri Rama returned to Ayodhya having spent 14 years of exile. It is also the day when the Pandavas returned to rule having spent Vanavasa and Ajnatavasa. So that is the significance of Deepavali proper.
The day of Rama, Lakshmana and Sita returning after the 14 years of exile. I think we'll reserve that for the Ramakatha Rasvaini series which we are running. And incidentally, today was supposed to be a Ramakatha Rasvaini. And because it's satsang on Diwali day, we chose to do it on Diwali. But, you know, coming back to the other episode which Swami says of the Pandavas returning after the forest. You know, that again is a very, very significant event. Because I remember, I think one of the modern age writers on the Mahabharata, he writes, he gives a perspective of what it means for the Panchapandavas and, you know, Draupadi to spend those years in the forest. Because he says, the Kuru dynasty is supposed to be the most powerful dynasty in the Bharatvarsha, or, you know, that unified Bharat of those years. And you had all these small countries, small rulers.
Kingdoms.
Who, you know, kings and who owed their allegiance to the Kuru dynasty.
They were all vassal kings.
Right. And, you know, before this episode of the gambling which leads to the Pandavas to leave to the forest, you know, that's when the Rajasuya Yajna is performed by Yudhishthira after he sets up the Indraprastha as his capital.
In that Yajna, in the Rajasuya Yajna, Yudhishthira is accepted as the overlord of the entire earth by all the other kings and emperors.
Right. And, you know, that is the height of glory the Pandavas have reached. They have been accepted as the rulers of the entire realm. And from there, to live for 12 years in the forest, you know, in the midst of beasts, and to live like recluse. And after that comes an even more demeaning episode of that 1 year of Ajnatvas, where they go to the kingdom of Virat, which is supposed to be a very tiny kingdom.
A vassal kingdom it is.
Even among the kings, they're not the very powerful ones, because they talk of the prince of Virat, who is supposed to be nothing more than a joker.
Uttara.
Right.
Yes. Prince Uttara.
Right. And here is Draupadi, you know, living as a dasi to the queen, and Yudhishthira living like a minister, a consultant.
A courtier,
right. Yeah. He's one of the courtiers whom the king plays, you know, gambles with throughout.
Bhima becomes the cook.
Nakula
takes care of the horses.
And Arjuna becomes the teacher to the princess.
As a eunuch.
You know, it's one of the most
demeaning
episode, because their ego is completely crushed. But the beautiful thing is, following this is the battle where they fight for dharma. Because they are put through this process by which every, you know, little bit of ego they have is being removed. so that that war which follows, they fight it only for the sake of dharma, not for the sake of revenge, not for the sake of, because they've been through that lowest ebb. It is not for honor they are fighting. It's only because Krishna said that to fight is your dharma.
The other perspective of the same episode, Prem, is that they have given up all that they considered as most valuable with the realization that, you know what, actually these are not very valuable. What is most valuable is dharma and Krishna. Once they realize it, once they realize that the thing that is actually valuable is dharma and Krishna, the war happens and everything is conferred upon them. The whole kingdom comes back to them. I am reminded of the famous three zeros that Swami would often say.
Right.
You know, when you go to God, Swami would say that when you go to God and say, Swami, I want you. God, I want you and nothing else. The first zero that God throws at you is the zero of wealth. He takes away all the wealth and says, now do you want wealth or do you want me? That is what happened to the Pandavas. They lost all their wealth in that game of dice. The next, when you, at that time, if you have the wisdom to say, Lord, I want you, the next zero that God throws at you is the zero of relationships and friendships. You are cut away from everybody whom you consider dear to you. It might happen through death, through misunderstandings, through various ways. That is what happens to the Pandavas when they go through Vanavasa. They have to go to the forest and they are cut away from all their kith and kin and relatives and friends, and that's it. Even at that time, after that time, you know, God asks, now do you want me or do you want your friends and relatives back? At that time, if we have the wisdom to say, Lord, I want you, then God throws the most difficult, the toughest and the final zero, which is zero of self-respect and esteem, self-esteem, where your self-respect is taken away. That is something that all of us hold very dear to ourselves. That is what happened to the Pandavas. When Bhima becomes the cook, when Nakula is tending to the horses, Sahadeva is cleaning cow dung and tending to the cows, and Arjuna, the greatest warrior of all times, the most, you know, manly man, the most manly man of time, of those times, has to become a eunuch. That is what is meant by giving up self-esteem. Because God asks at that time, do you want your self-esteem or do you want me? At that time, if we are able to say, Swami, I don't care for my self-respect, self-esteem, I want you, then the greatest gift, the gift of dharma and the Lord himself, is bestowed upon us. And you know, when we look at whether it is Dhanteras, offering the wealth, everything to the Lord, Naraka Chaturdasi, where you give up ignorance and get the light of illumination, or Deepavali day, when you are supposed to give up everything for the Lord, all of it points towards, you know, if it has to be summarized in a few words, it will be, give up Dehabhimanam, develop Daivabhimanam.
Absolutely, and that is the very essence of these entire festivals, because, you know, people think that this is a worship of Lakshmi. People think that this is a festival where you please God as Lakshmi. But this is a completely different festival when you see it in this thing where, you know, it is all about illumination. And talking about, you know, the how the Pandavas return, we said this. The next day, the day after Diwali, is also an event.
That is tomorrow.
Right, tomorrow, which is very significant in that sense, which is called Balipadyami.
Balipadyami.
Balipadyami. Because this was the day when Bali Chakravarti was supposed to have, you know, entered or was pressed down to the netherworlds by Vamanavatar.
You know, if you see that, Prem, that is another example of how ego is crushed by the Lord. When ego is crushed by the Lord, when Bali says, Lord, place your feet on my head. You know, that is another, is that not another instance of Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam, where Bali realizes the futility and folly of him thinking that he is the Chakravarti. That is, he is the emperor of the world. The Lord seems to tell him that you are Chakravarti only because I choose you to be. Actually, you are a nobody. And the minute, you know, the beauty of it is the minute you realize that you are a nobody, you become worshipable. And imagine that is the day Bali has lent his name for the day, Bali Padyami. So you see, the entire festival
and the other
all about giving up ego.
Right, and the other event for which tomorrow's day is significant is also something which is very similar to the episode in the life of Bali Chakravarti, which is, it is believed that this was the day Krishna lifted the Govardhanagiri to humble Lord Indra. It was again the same, very same events, because Indra was given a position by the Lord, and when that position started getting to his head, the Lord said, it is a position I have given, you know, carry out the duties of that position with humility. And this was the day when Lord Krishna humbled Indra through that episode of lifting a Govardhan.
The same theme of destroying ego. And if you see this episode in the light that we presented before, Prem, that Indra is the mind.
Right.
The mind often has this tendency, you know, man, because of his intelligence, the mind begins to think, why do I need God? In fact, some of the late, I know that some of the greatest scientists of our times, which includes Stephen Hawking, they say there is no need for God because all that needs to be explained can be done. This is the Indra syndrome that we are speaking about, you know, where the mind feels that I know everything. Why do I need God? And that comes because of Dehabhimanam. Dehabhimanam, which has to be destroyed in order to inculcate Daivabhimanam, which is the message of Deepavali. So the fourth day, Bali Padyami, is also about destroying ego, where, you know, the two stories are one of Bali being humbled, the other of Indra being humbled. Finally, the fifth day is Bhav Bij. It is a day for siblings to come together and, you know, brother, sister, brother, brother, all of them, you know, they bond and unite, and that feeling of oneness spreads. You know, that is the automatic result of Daivabhimanam, where you are able to, you know, instead of going by the literal term, if we look a little with a little larger heart and a wider vision, we realize that Bhav Bij is the day when we realize the brotherhood of man under the fatherhood of God. We realize we all are one, and this is only possible when we are in that Daivabhimanam, having given up our own little Dehabhimanam. And so with that, the festival gets complete, and the 5 days, the underlying basic theme is all about dispelling the darkness of ignorance, the ignorance that is brought on by Dehabhimanam, through devotion to the Lord, through detachment from everything worldly, and through love for the Lord, because of which there is illumination, the light of wisdom, which develops in us Daivabhimanam, the feeling of oneness with everything in the creation.
You know, when you put this in the perspective in which we've tried to do, and of course it's not our perspective, it's the perspective which Swami has given, I think ignored for way too long. But if you look at it, now when you say that you worship Goddess Lakshmi is also called Vishnu Maya. When you worship Goddess Lakshmi, when you worship wealth, it is to not invite wealth and get the blessings of wealth, but it is to say that, you know, Goddess Mother Lakshmi, don't delude me. You know, please do not make me give more importance than you than it's necessary. You know, just give me enough so that I don't have to worry about what I need. I can think of the Lord. And I think that is what the essence of this entire festival is, to go beyond the body consciousness, to go beyond the body's needs, and to go beyond this darkness, which is the only way to reach that light. And
when you were speaking about Lakshmi, I just remembered one more little analogy that Swami would give. Swami says that wealth is like your footwear. If it's too big, it becomes uncomfortable to walk. If it's too small also, it becomes uncomfortable to walk. So I feel Lakshmi Puja is the day when we pray for the perfect sized shoes, so that we are able to walk our life with, you know, with the Lord's name as the light guiding us and lighting up our path.
So with that, dear listeners, we'll conclude this week's afternoon satsang, especially on Diwali. We're going to leave you with that wonderful prayer, which is from Sanatan Dharma, which is Asatoma Sadgamya, which kind of symbolizes this entire festivity of Diwali. And on the other side of it, we'll play for you an episode of Love to Love, and will be followed by the other programs of the afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us. With much gratitude and love, we offer this humble effort of ours at Swami's Lotus Feet.
And of course, dear listeners, anything, there's so much more that can be added to Deepavali. We have researched so much, we have not yet covered everything that Swami has said, so there'll be a lot that we have left unsaid. Definitely do share your thoughts, your feedback, what you feel, and what are your experiences with Deepavali and Bhagwan. You can write to us at listener@radiosai.org. We eagerly await your mails. We will read into. So that will be a satsang for both Prem and me after this satsang.
Shanti, Shanti.